Pirkei Avos, and we are up to a Mishnah where we are told, "Ase Ritzono Kiritzonecha Kedei Sheyase Ritzoncha Kiritzono." That sounds like a tongue twister, but it's a very, very important line in the Mishnah, as all the lines in the Mishnah are important to us. So let's try to understand it. Let's delve into this just a little bit this morning. Ase Ritzono Kiritzonecha. One should attempt during life, throughout life, to make the Ratzon Hashem your personal Ratzon as well. So some commentaries on the Mishnah point out that you'll notice the Mishnah does not say, Asei mitzvosav kiritzonecha. It does not say that my ratzon, my wish in my life should be to do the mitzvos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which would have naturally been the right thing to say. So what does it mean? What does it mean that I should make the ratzon of Hashem my ratzon? And the answer they give is as follows. To follow the mitzvos of the Torah, that's obvious. The Mishnah doesn't have to tell us that. It's undeniable that the life of a Jew has to be governed by the laws of the Torah, both mitzvot aseh and los aseh. It governs what we do and as well as what we don't do. What the Mishnah here tells us is that we should make the wishes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that perhaps are not outlined in the pages of Chumash and throughout the Torah, that should be our ratzon. Now that's a very big challenge, to figure out what exactly is the ratzon Hashem. For a person to understand and to intuit, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want when in fact it's not written in the pages of Chumash itself? So that's what we're going to discuss this morning. A most powerful illustration of this concept, of this idea, can be found in these parshios when we're talking about the Avos. So the Gemara tells us both in Kiddushin as well as in Maseches Yuma, Avram Avinu kiyem kol haTorah kula kodem shenitna. Avram Avinu observed all the Taryag Mitzvos HaTorah. Now you'll ask yourself, how did Avram Avinu know about Shabbos? How did Avram Avinu know about any of the laws of the Torah? How did he know about Kashrus? How was he supposed to know this? And the answer is because he understood HaKadosh Baruch Hu so well that he was able to intuit what exactly the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was without even being told. That is why Avram Avinu kept the entirety of Torah. He was able to appreciate what the Ratzon Hashem was. But for us, post-Kabbalah HaTorah, when we have everything that outlines for us what the Ratzon Hashem actually is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu already laid everything out for us. So what exactly does this concept mean? What does it mean that the Ratzon Hashem should be our Ratzon? So the Ramban al HaTorah introduces us to a fundamentally important concept where he explains the general mandate of Kedoshim Tiyu. The Torah says in Parshas Kedoshim, Kedoshim Tiyu, we have an obligation to be holy. Now what does it mean to be holy? So how do you define what being holy actually means? So I would say being holy means following everything that the Ribbono Shel Olam told you to do. If you do all of that, then you're going to live a life of holiness. If you don't, then you're living a different kind of life. But the Ramban says, obviously that's not what it means, because this seems to be an overarching principle of Kedoshim Tiyu without being given any of the details. Explains the Ramban so beautifully, let's learn it together. Number Aleph, V'ha'inyan. The Ramban asks, what does it mean when the Torah asks of us to be kedoshim, to be holy? Ki haTorah hizhira ba'arayos u'machalim asurim. The Torah has already outlined for us who we're allowed to marry, which relationships we're allowed to engage in, what kinds of foods we're allowed to eat or not eat. V'haTorah hiviyav ish be'ishto v'achilas basar v'yayin. While at the same time, the Torah said you're not allowed to marry these kinds of people. And the Torah said you're not allowed to eat these kinds of foods. The Torah at the same time also told us that husband and wife should be married to each other and that we should enjoy kosher food. The Torah doesn't say we should abstain. Imkein, and if that is the case, says the Ramban, Yimatze bal hataiva makom, lios shatuf bezimas ishto o nashav harabos, velios besove yayin uvezolele basar lamo. You can have a person who is so unrestrained, and they can say, I'm following the guidelines that the Torah set out for me. So the Torah says I should be married, I married the right kind of person, but you're acting inappropriately with your spouse. The Torah didn't tell me how I should act with my spouse, so I'll do what I want. Says the Ramban, is it conceivable that a person should behave inappropriately with their own spouse, even though the Torah just said, you should marry this kind of person, stay away from that kind of person. So once I marry that person, now you just have free rein to do whatever you want? Of course not. Says the Ramban, does it make sense that although the Torah says these are the kosher items that one is allowed to consume, Does it make sense that a person should be able to live a life of completely uncontrollable, gluttonous behavior? Besove yayin v'zolele basar lamo. Right? When they announce in our neighborhood that we're having a fleshfest. This is exactly what the Rambam says. It's disgusting. The word is disgusting. What does that mean? Is that a Jewish concept? Says the Ramban, while it's true that everything we're eating is kosher, while it's true that we're ordering from a kosher restaurant, and we're doing everything, al pi, exactly what the Torah told us to do, but says the Ramban, is it conceivable that you're going to hang up signs all over a neighborhood and say, come join us for a fleshfest? What does that even mean, says the Ramban? It doesn't mean don't enjoy life. It means a person should have a certain style and attitude of life. V'yadaber kiritzona b'chal ha'nevelos. So if a person speaks profanity, where in the Torah does it say that a person should not speak in that way? So the Torah says, don't speak Lashon Hara. Don't speak Motzi Shemra. Don't speak Rechilus. Where does the Torah say that one should not speak in a profane fashion? Shalo huskar iser zeba Torah. V'hine, and says the Ramban, he comes up with a new concept where he says, Yiyazeh novel b'rshus ha-Torah. It is possible for a person to be a completely abominable human being while still remaining in the confines and the purview of all the Torah and mitzvahs. How can that be? Says the Ramban. I use vulgar language. I have no restraint. I have no self-control. And I never violate an Avera. Is that the kind of life that the Torah wants me to live? Says the Ramban, this is what it means when we talk about Kedoshim to you. After the Torah outlines exactly who you're allowed to marry, what all of the arayos are, what is considered appropriate to be eaten or not, the Torah then says, after all of that, we have another overarching principle, which is Kedoshim to you. With all that I've outlined for you to do or not do, there is something that goes beyond that. And that is to have the attitude of the Torah. To have what it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to do. Once we've outlined what the parameters are, now what is the style in which you are going to do it? I remember I once read Rav Soloveitchik writes in one of the more recently published books from old recordings, he says something about, we talk about the Derech Hashem. What does Derech Hashem mean? So he says, a Derech means a highway. A Derech means a road. What is the road of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? There are many ways to get somewhere. The end goal is to keep the Torah mitzvahs. But there's an expectation that you're going to get there by using the Derech Hashem, by using the road, the highway, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to use. While it's true, there are other ways to get around when there's traffic. So we all know that ways will reorient us and send us a different way. But that's really not the way that a Torah life should be lived. And says the Ramban, Lefikach, Baha Kasev Acharei Sheparata Yisurim She'asar Osam Legamri. After the Torah tells us exactly what we are not allowed to do, Vitziva B'Dever Klali, and the Torah now gives a general, comprehensive, broad, sweeping, all-inclusive statement to tell us this encompasses every decision of life. Shania Prushim in Amosaros. And writes the Ramban, that's what the expectation of Kedoshim Tiyu is all about. Let's study a really classical illustration of this point from Chumash itself. You think about the story of Bilam. Are there any other characters in Chumash that you would say are as infamous as he was? He's probably on the top list of detestable human beings who tried to destroy the Jewish people, and the Torah goes into great detail about exactly what happened. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, who was killed in the Holocaust, has an amazing interpretation to try to understand what exactly went wrong with Bilam. So we talk about it, and we've learned it as young children, and we talk to our children about the story as well, but did you ever take a step back and read the words of the Chumash to try to understand, so what did he do wrong? Let's remind ourselves of the story. What happened? Balak was the king who wanted to destroy the Jewish people. He knew that he had no ability to do so. What does he do? He hires somebody who he knows is a great person. That person's name was Bilam. And what do we know about Bilam? The Gemara says, V'yodea das elyon. Bilam knew, the Gemara explains, L'chavenes hashah. Bilam knew exactly the inner workings of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, some say he was a greater Navi than Moshe Rabbeinu. We're told, Lo kam bi Yisrael kemoshe od. Right? We say it in the davening. Lo kam bi Yisrael kemoshe od. There was never a prophet who was as much a person who understood HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Moshe Rabbeinu, but the Medrash says, Aval be'umas ha'olam kam. There was a non-Jew who had the same kind of level of prophecy as Moshe Rabbeinu, and that was Bilam. So Bilam was a great person. What happens? He's hired to do a job. What's the end of the story? So we know the end of the story is, he goes, he tries, he has the whole very strange, unusual encounter with his donkey. Then he realizes, you know what, it's a mistake, let me stop. He ends up blessing the Jewish people, okay. Right, so Rabbi Chanan, let's take a step back and actually read the words of the Chumash to try to understand what went wrong. Let's read it together. Vayan Bilam Vayomar. Bilam is hired by Balak to go and curse and destroy the Jewish people. And he says, Im yiten li Balak melo beso kesef izav. I understand Balak is trying to offer me the world. He's giving me everything one can ever want to do a job. I'm being paid top dollar. Even if he will offer everything in the world, lo ucha lavar es pi Hashem Elokai, la'asos ketana o gedola. Even if he offers me everything, he'll give me everything I can ever imagine being paid for a job. What does he say? Lo uchal lavar es pi Hashem Elokai. I apologize, but I cannot go against the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I ask you, does that sound like an evil person? That sounds extremely reasonable. Sounds very judicious. He's being careful and he's saying, look, I was hired for a job. I'm very conflicted. I have a lot of money coming my way and a lot of prestige and honor. I personally have nothing against the Jewish people, but I was hired to do a job. So here's how it works. When I have a conflict, I try to see whether HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to get involved in this or not. I ask you, how many people here have been to a job interview? I'm sure many. At what point in the job interview did you turn internally to yourself and say, is this what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to do? The job sounds wonderful. They're offering me an amazing salary. So instead of saying, let me ask my family members, let me ask my spouse, let me see if this works well for my schedule, let me see if I can do it, can I handle this load? Did you ever ask yourself, let me ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu whether he wants me to do this? Let me ask a Shiloh whether I belong in this kind of position or not. So Bilam is far greater than all of us. He's hired for a job. It's extremely enticing. And the only response is, I'm happy to do it because it's a job, but with one condition. Only if this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to do. So Rabbi Chanan asked the obvious question. So then why does he go down in history as such an awful person? And throughout his journey to try to go and see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted, he gets a very clear message that this is not what he should do. Sometimes we all get clear messages that it's not what we should do, and we do it anyway. Bilam gets a clear message, this is not what you should do, and he turns around and he goes home. He quits. So what's wrong? Let's read together what Rabbi Chanan says. Kasabi Yirmiyah, he quotes a pasuk in Sefer Yirmiyah, Perek Yutes, where Yirmiyah is condemning the shameful, sinful behavior of the Jewish community at the time. And he says that there's so much rampant Avodah Zarah going around the streets and the community. Uvanu es bamos habal, lisrof es b'neim ba'esh. Can you believe it? There are Jewish families who are sacrificing their own children to the Avodah Zarah, to the Baal. What is the Baal? Where they used to actually kill their children for the sake of this idol. Asher lo tzivisi, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells the Navi, this is certainly not what I've instructed them to do. V'lo dibarti, I never said that this is how a Jew should live. V'lo alsa alibi, and it never crossed my heart, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that somebody would ever do such a thing. The Targum there writes, as he quotes, what does that mean? Asher lo tzivisi v'lo dibarti v'lo alsa alibi, d'lo paktiz ba'araisi, I never commanded, I never instructed you to do this. D'lo shalchus bi'ad avdi nevi'aya, I never communicated through a Navi that this is what you should do. V'lo rava kadamai, and it is also not my wish. V'hine, says Rabbi Chanan, because of Azem Efurish, what you see evident in this pasuk is, ki yesh shlosha chelke ha-Torah. You see that there are three dimensions to the Torah life that we're supposed to live. Number one, there's something called a tzivui. Number two, there's something called a dibur, which means Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe Lemor. Every so often, Moshe Rabbeinu is told something to communicate to the Jewish people. But that is not where it ends. Says Rabbi Chanan, you have everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said explicitly, you have everything he shared with the Nevi'im, and then you have category number three, She'ein alav lo tzivui velo dibur, ela ratzon Hashem belvad. You have a third category, which is nothing that is found explicitly in the Chumash, nothing that a Navi communicated to us, but rather the Ratzon Hashem, the feeling, the sentiment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This third aspect, he says, Yesh inyan shal Ratzon Hashem beli lios din ha-Torah o divrei ha-Nevuah. That is a big chiddush, to argue that there's a part of our lives which is not written anywhere, but is the Ratzon Hashem, and therefore the expectation of all of us. How do you understand that? Says Rabbi Chanan, you need a great Talmid Chacham to tell you how to interpret in between the lines to know what is the Ratzon Hashem. My father often used to tell us, I'm sure he still says it. So, if anyone's familiar with the subway in Manhattan, closer to Washington Heights, so he used to give us this example. You get to 181st Street, what does it say in the subway station? Other than the graffiti and all the other things going on there. It says Yeshiva University. Okay. So my father always says, you take the subway, you want to find the Ratzon Hashem. This is just the example he gave. So you see, there's a sign for the yeshiva. So let me get out. I'll go to yeshiva. No, but I decide I want to go further into the Ratzon Hashem. I want to volunteer to do more. So what do? I go one extra stop on the train, and where does it lead me? The next stop is the cloisters. That's the example he always gave us. You think you're going further into the Ratzon Hashem by going one extra step. I want to volunteer to do this, and it sounds wonderful, and I'm very well-intentioned when I do so. But not always is going further, is going one extra step, furthering what the Ratzon Hashem actually is. It's very possible that what I'm volunteering to do is actually driving me straight into the cloisters and very far away from what a yeshiva represents. That's the mashal he always gave us. And again, it's hard to really find the perfect balance. Very often we have arguments in our generation where we will be asked, where does it say that? How can you say this is usher? It doesn't say it anywhere. I look through all of Shulchan Aruch, and especially today when we have such an ability to find anything. Everybody can do a Google search and find whatever they want and search things. So people will often ask, where does it say that this is a problem? How do you know that this is wrong? And the answer is, we need people to tell us what the Ratzon Hashem actually is. Not everybody has that ability to discern what the Ratzon Hashem is. It takes a person who really spends their entire life fully engulfed in what HaKadosh Baruch Hu represents, to then tell us how to interpret it. I think about it all the time. People have conversations with my father. If you don't know him, you don't fully understand what he's always saying. Now, yes, you were present at the conversation. You can repeat his words, but you don't really understand what the style is. You don't understand what he's really trying to say sometimes. It's famous in yeshiva. Sometimes when somebody will come and ask a question, my father will say, I don't know. So there's two I don't knows. There's I don't know and you're a total fool and I can't believe you just asked that. And there's I don't know because I have to look into it. There's two different I don't knows. And the real Talmidim know which I don't know he means when he's responding to a question. So I've had many young Talmidim when my father goes to Eretz Yisrael during the winter time. So Talmidim in Shalavim and in all these yeshivas will text me, I stumped your father. He told me he doesn't know. I don't have the heart to tell them that was the other I don't know. But that's really the reason I give that example is because when you know someone well enough, you understand something that's beneath the words that they're saying. When your spouse looks at you, when your child comes home and has a certain face, they don't have to say anything. You understand them. I can be standing in the room, I don't understand it. Does it mean that I'm foolish? Does it mean that I'm lacking something? No, it just means you don't know this person well enough. So it's the same thing. When you have a doctor, say for example, doctors will tell us that one of the most damaging things to patients today is that they Google everything and they think they know and they think they're a doctor. But the doctor has 25 years, 30 years of experience in this field. And they look at you for 1 second and they see right away what the problem is. You can ask them a million questions. Yeah, but I Googled it and I looked at this. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. Because they have a deeper understanding of what it is. And it's the same in every discipline. A scientist is going to go explain to me the intricacies of the questions that I have. They can't even begin to explain it. I'm so far away from their level of understanding. And it's the same with trying to decipher and understand what the Ratzon Hashem is. Not everyone has the ability to understand what the theme, what the attitude, what the perspective of HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually is. Yes, we can all read the same words. We can all Google it. We can all open a Chumash. But not everyone has the certain level of intuition to really understand what is beneath the surface of the text. What is the Ratzon Hashem? So how many times have we had the conversation? Are scooters mutter on Shabbos or not? Right? I've had this question a million times. Are scooters mutter on Shabbos or not? So, it's a good question. It's a very good question. I don't know the answer. I'm just saying that major discussion 50 years ago about using a bicycle on Shabbos. So, in our communities, generally most people do not use a bike on Shabbos. So the Svarim write, it's a problem. Maybe if the bike breaks, you're going to fix it. It's nothing to do with that. It's not Shabbos if you use a bike on Shabbos, right? Everyone agree with me? I think so. Now you move further to our generation. No one's using bikes anymore. We use scooters. So what would you say? Is a scooter mutter to use on Shabbos or not? So how many times have high school kids asked us, show me where it says that a scooter's not allowed. So what do you want me to show you? We should find some contemporary sefer that's going to say a scooter's not allowed on Shabbos. It's not the point. Is this the way we're supposed to observe Shabbos or not? Is this the Ratzon Hashem? I don't know. I think it depends where you live. I think it depends on the circumstance. For example, I was just in Florida a few weeks ago. Someone there was describing to us, a very wonderful person was describing how hot it is in Hollywood, Florida during the summer months. And he lives about a 20-minute walk from shul. He said, by the time I get to shul, he said, I stop wearing Shabbos clothing. I stop wearing Shabbos clothing. He said, I literally come to shul. I am completely soaked. So he told me he doesn't wear tzitzis anymore because he's going to ruin his tzitzis every Shabbos. He doesn't wear Shabbos clothing anymore, and I don't blame him. He said to me he wants to use a scooter in order to be able to go to shul. So is that the same as people who want to use a scooter just because they want to have a good time on Shabbos? I don't know. I think there's a difference. I think there's a difference. Now, what's it going to look like? They showed me that it so happens that the security fence in the shul there in Hollywood, Florida has slats in the fence. So they said on Shabbos, everybody just parks their scooters there. And when I first heard it, I said, wow, that's so strange. Then when you hear what's behind it, it kind of makes sense. No one's doing it as a Zilzul Shabbos. They're doing it as a Kavod Shabbos. They're all scootering in their suits and ties. So again, it depends where you are. It depends what the style is. It depends what the reason, what the motive is for doing what you're doing. But the question that you're going to ask is, where does it say that? How many people asked, and I'm sorry to get into this because I have no interest in getting into it and it's not really so relevant for our community, but yes, there was a big movement a few years ago to try to have women rabbis in many Orthodox shuls, and many people asked, well, where does it say that it's us? Or the answer is it doesn't say it anywhere. But it's not the Ratzon Hashem. It's not the Ratzon Hashem. It's just not. Ask anyone who understands what Ratzon Hashem is all about, and they will tell you, this is not the Ratzon Hashem. So can you point to a Sif in Shulchan Aruch? Yeah, my father wrote, Rav Soloveitchik found a Rama in the beginning of Yerodea. It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. Rav Asher Weiss actually told me at the time when my father wrote the piece, he said, why do you even get into that? Why do you even quote the Rama? You shouldn't quote anything. The bottom line is, it's not the Ratzon Hashem. We don't have to say anything further. Anyone who has an understanding of what Ratzon Hashem is understands that this is not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. This is not the direction we should go in. And it goes a million different examples of the same thing. But says Rabbi Chanan, let's get back to the story of Bilam HaRasha. Lefi Pshutei HaMekros Nireh. It seems, based on the simple understanding of the words, this is five lines from the end. Shezeh Haya Avono Shebilam HaRasha. What exactly did Bilam do wrong? De Lechora Acharei Sha'amar. Bilam says, "Im yitein li Balak melo beso kasev hazav lo uchal laver as pi Hashem." Ma hirish also? Question mark. What was wrong with Bilam's response? After all, he said, "I will follow exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to do." I guess I'm not fired up enough because I'm freezing again. Anybody else? All right, let's get serious. Avol b'emes, says Rabbi Elchanan, what really was wrong with what Bilam HaRasha did? Af sheyada Bilam heitev ki alichaso lekalel es Yisrael hu neged ritzon Hashem. Although Bilam HaRasha knew with certainty that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not want him to curse the Jewish people, lo chashas al zeh. Bilam said, let's look at his words. Lo ucha lavar es pi Hashem. If I find written somewhere that I shouldn't do this, then I won't do it. Yeah, but you know it's the wrong thing to do. That didn't register. It's only Ratzon Hashem lo hayachashav be'enav la'asoso v'zuhi rishaso. What was wrong with Bilam was that he said, if it doesn't say it somewhere explicitly, if you can't show me chapter and verse that this is wrong, then that means there's nothing wrong with it. It's all dependent on what the Pi Hashem is, what Hashem says explicitly with his own mouth. And if the Ribono Shel Olam doesn't say it, there's no concept as Ratzon Hashem. That is why he goes down in history as Bilam HaRasha. Because he knew very well that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not desire this. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not want this. But that didn't matter to him. So long as nobody was able to point to a chapter and verse and show him that it was wrong, he went ahead with his plan. And that explains to Rabbi Chanan is what it means to have an intuition, an understanding of what the Ratzon Hashem is. It's very interesting. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was asked what his feeling is about the Tzom Kal pill. Anybody heard of it? It's been around for a long time. They have these pills that are time-release capsules. You take it before Yom Kippur, and over the course of the day, it will help you that you won't be able to feel anything over the course of Yom Kippur. So it's interesting. It's fascinating that scientifically we can do such things. But is there anything wrong with taking that? Well, you're taking it before Yom Kippur. What can possibly be wrong? So if Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes, in his feeling, he says, Ha'osa tatzdiki, somebody who does a workaround, in order that limnoa me'alav es ha'inui, that I shouldn't feel the affliction on Yom Kippur. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, that's the same as this Ramban. Of course, if you don't feel well, and of course, if a person has no other way to do it, then you do it. But says Rav Shlomo Zalman, when the Torah describes what Yom Kippur is, let's look at the words. Ve'inisem es nafsho seichem. People call all the time on a fast day and they say, you know, I don't feel well. Yeah, you're not supposed to feel well. Ve'inisem es nafsho seichem. Yeah, you're not supposed to get sick and die. You're not supposed to get sick and have a serious condition. But yes, we're supposed to be weak on a fast day. That's the point. The Torah tells us, ve'inisem es nafsho seichem. Now, how am I supposed to afflict myself, says the Gemara. Maybe I should walk on pins and needles the whole day so that I'll hurt myself and prick myself the whole day? Of course not. There are rules and regulations of how inui actually is supposed to be done and how not. But yet, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, you're going to take a pill to basically undo everything that the Torah had in mind about Yom Kippur? Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, it just doesn't sit right with me. That's not what Yom Kippur is for. The last parasha in Sefer Bamidbar lists and catalogs a directory of all the various locations that the Jewish people traveled throughout the 40 years in the desert. Now we know that every word in the Torah is so carefully measured and there for a very specific reason. So you ask yourself, why would the Torah go to such lengths to repeat a seemingly irrelevant, inapplicable, extraneous listing of every place where they traveled? We've all heard it. They went here and they went there. But we read it already. First of all, we read it already. But second of all, even if we didn't, it's irrelevant. It's never going to happen again. We're not traveling through the desert 40 years, so why do we need to repeat all of the junctures, all the stops along the way? What was the reason for it? Many Mefarshim are bothered with this, but in the Sefer Degel Machane Ephraim, which is the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, he writes in the name of his grandfather the following interpretation, where he says as follows, Achda, you should know, Sheshamati B'Shem Adoni Avi Zakeni, I heard from my grandfather, the Baal Shem Tov. Ki kala masos hayumem beis. They had 42 stops along the way until they made it to Eretz Yisrael. Vehem etzel kal adam. And the truth is, he writes, that this really is a forecast of the journey of all of our lives. We have many different stops along the way, many different junctures in our own journeys. Miyom hivoldo ad shuvu el olamo, from the day we are born until we are no longer here. Ula havin zeh, and he explains, we need to all understand, ki miyom haleda, from the day that we are born, mehotseso merecham imo, hu bechinas yitzias mitzrayim. It's almost as if we're trapped inside of a womb, and then we have the opportunity to get out. That's like Yitzias Mitzrayim. And now your journey begins. And now you're in the wilderness, which is exactly what this world is. And you're traveling from Mitzrayim, trying to get to the Promised Land, trying to get to Eretz Yisrael. That is exactly what life is, says the Baal Shem Tov. You're going from one thing to another, trying to navigate your way around the Wild West, trying to figure out, what am I supposed to be doing or not? Which decision should I make? Who should I marry? What kind of community should I live in? Where should my children go to school? What kind of job should I have? What should I do with my money? All of these questions are all a part of the journey of our lives. Va'achar kach noseya, mimasa lamasa, and we travel from one place to another, ad bo le'eretz ha'chaim he'elyona. Until the end of the journey, the same way the Jewish people ended up in Eretz Yisrael in the Promised Land, the end of our journey is Olam Haba. So you have a whole life to figure out how you're going to journey that experience. What are you going to do? And perhaps most importantly, he says, is the mention in Parshas Maaseh, over and over again, Al Pi Hashem Yachanu V'Al Pi Hashem Yiso. Every leg of the journey from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael, they ask themselves, where does God want us to go? What does the Ribono Shel Olam want for us? Sometimes they made mistakes. Sometimes they made the wrong decision or the wrong choice. But it was always asking themselves, Al pi Hashem yachanu, v'al pi Hashem yiso. It's the way it needs to be. And that, he argues, is why the Torah goes at a great expense to repeat all of this again, because it's so relevant for our journey. To remind ourselves that as we go through all of those different stops, we need to reflect and ask ourselves, is the decision I'm about to make something that is Al pi Hashem yachanu v'al pi Hashem yiso? So I look at a community and I ask, is this where I should park my family? Is this the kind of school I should go to? Is this the kind of job I should have? Well, turn around and ask yourself, is this what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to do? Is this the Ratzon Hashem? Is it Al pi Hashem yachanu v'al pi Hashem yiso? And therefore, he says, before going to the next leg of the journey, this is important, that a person be able to answer that question. Is this what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants? I was so moved. During COVID, there was somebody who ran some kind of business. I don't think it was a major business, but a small business. And he told me that he was entitled to all kinds of loans and different kinds of things. And in the end, the government sent him a check that it was an exorbitant amount of money that really he was not, he said, his business was running fine and he really feels that he just found a loophole that was legitimate and it was legal. But he said, this was not intended for me. I have a small business. All of my workers were able to be paid. We were able to continue the business online. And he said that nothing really suffered. And he came to talk to me and he said, is it Geneva? Is it stealing for me to keep the money? It's a great question. So I said, just look yourself in the mirror and ask, is this what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from you? Can you get away with it? Probably. Is there anything illegal about it? Probably not. Is this what the Ribono Shel Olam wants from you? I can't answer that question because I don't know the intricacies of your business. But ask yourself, would HaKadosh Baruch Hu be proud of this decision that you're making? Is this Al Pi Hashem Yachanu V'Al Pi Hashem Yiso? Are you stealing? No, you're not stealing. Are you cheating anybody? Not at all. Did you do everything legally and you filed the paperwork the way you were supposed to? Yes. Are you doing the right thing? No. Are you doing the right thing? The answer is no. I remember I had a conversation with Rabbi Elimelech Bluth, who was the posik of Camp Simcha. He passed away a few years ago. He's a very, very close Talmud of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. So he never came to camp, but we used to consult him on many of the issues that came up. And he had a Masorah, he had a tradition from Rabbi Moshe on many of the issues that we spoke to him about. And on one occasion, I was talking to him about a Shabbos issue and very critical care for one of the campers who was there. And I was going through in Shulchan Aruch, it says this, and I said the Magen Avraham says that, and the Mishnah Berurah says this, and he said, "You're 100% right, but you're 1,000% wrong." And I didn't really appreciate it at the time. But he said, "You're 100% right, but you're dead wrong. Because I don't care how many sources you show me. And it doesn't matter how much you're going to try to prove your point. You're wrong. It's just wrong. This is not the way we treat a patient. This is not the way we handle a situation on Shabbos. Doesn't matter what you're going to find or how you're going to buttress the argument. It's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. There's no way. There's no way the Ribono Shel Olam wants this. We actually had it this summer. There was a camper who came, and unfortunately she has a terrible, terrible condition. And as a result of that, I think she gained almost 300 pounds in 1 year from a tumor that she has. It's horrific. And I did not recognize her from the summer before when she came with a tumor, and then everything progressed to such a degree. Anyway, she came this summer, and it came the first Shabbos, and she came to me on Erev Shabbos and said, "What am I going to do?" I said, "What's the problem?" She says, "Well, I don't use a wheelchair at home, an electric wheelchair on Shabbos, so what am I going to do here?" So I said, "Why do you not use an electric wheelchair at home?" She said, "Well, my great-grandfather was the Chafetz Chaim. Would he be proud of me?" And I said, "He'd be proud of you if you were doing the right thing. You didn't ask the Chafetz Chaim the Shaila. So let's look what the Chafetz Chaim tells you to do." So we start going through it, a very learned girl, and I'm showing her in the Mishnah Berurah that somebody in your condition needs to take care of themselves. And this is what we're going to do. So we're back and forth, we're discussing it. She tells me I have to call my parents. I said, "Great, I'm happy to call your parents." Called her parents, called one parent, called the other parent, back and forth. The father says, "You know, I'm not comfortable with this, you have to call my posik." I said, "What do you do for a living? And how do you deal with your daughter at home?" He says, "I learn in a kol." I said, "How old are you?" He says, "He's been learning in kol for 25 years. I said, "You've been learning in kol for 25 years and you don't understand that this is not appropriate to tell your daughter not to take care of herself on Shabbos? What have you learned? I don't understand. What have you learned? You know, we're mekel on Shabbos for yisuva daita of a patient. Yisuva daita means if I'm anxious about something and as a result of that I'm going to have some kind of other problem that may result." I said, "Your daughter is a real chole. She's actively going through treatment." So he tells me, "We need to make a shinui." I said, "Fine, no problem. We have people in camp who know how to do everything." So here I am negotiating, spending my whole Friday negotiating with these parents. How are we going to come up with a shinui? I went to the workers in camp. I said, "Can you make something for the joystick on her wheelchair that we can figure this out?" "No problem." They go, they make something with pipes and whatever it may have been so that she can have some kind of shinui. He tells me, "Send me a picture." Send them a picture. He says, "No, it's not a good enough shinui." I said, "Okay, I give up. We're going to do what we have to do, or you can come pick your daughter up. This is not something we're going to spend our time negotiating." I finally call his posik. I said, "Listen, do you know what's going on?" He says, "Yes, the parents called me. They told me." I said, "Did you ever see this patient? You're dealing with someone who's over 400 pounds. You're going to try to make a shinui on her wheelchair that can flip over if you're going to use it improperly. Then what?" So he tells me, "What's your name?" I told him, "Shai Schechter." He says, "Where are you from?" I said, "Washington Heights." He says, "Are you related to Rav Schechter?" I said, "Yes, he's my father." He said, "So why don't you ask him?" I said, I did ask him. So he says, "So why are you calling me?" I said, "I have no idea." So he says, "So do what you need to do." But again, sometimes you have a situation where you can find and you can ask, and yes, a shinui is appropriate, but it's totally inappropriate. You're 100% right, but you're dead wrong. It's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. It can't be. There's no way this is what the Ribono Shel Olam wants in this situation. It cannot be. So let's see. In the end of Sefer Bamidbar, which really in essence is the end of the entirety of Torah, because Sefer Devarim is just a repeat of everything else. So you have the Ribono Shel Olam's most amazing work, which is the Torah Kedosha. The Ribono Shel Olam is giving us a piece of himself. He's giving us everything we need to know as Jews. How would you suggest that he ends off this amazing story of Chamisha Chumshei Torah? What should be the last message that he imparts to all of us? I would say it should probably be something that is extremely decisive, something very significant, a very powerful message at the end of Sefer Bamidbar. So what is it? What does the Torah tell us? Torah says a story. How does Bamidbar end? The last parak in Bamidbar is talking about Shevet Menashe. What happens in Shevet Menashe? So there was an individual whose name was Tzlavchad, and he didn't have any sons. He only had daughters, which is wonderful. The problem was that as a result of him only having daughters, what's going to be? He has an estate in the land of Eretz Yisrael. And the Torah says it only goes to sons. So what's going to be? Who's going to end up getting his estate? So we know Moshe Rabbeinu says they should get it, and the daughters all ended up getting a portion of everything their father owned. Now, Shevet Menashe comes and poses a new question, and they say, well, that's very nice. Moshe Rabbeinu, you gave land to these five girls, and that's really, really wonderful. However, we have a problem because at some point they're going to get married. And when they get married, what's going to happen? They're going to marry someone from this Shevet and the other Shevet, and then their property is going to belong to their husbands equally, and then the Shevet Menashe is going to lose out. Every Shevet was given a portion in the land of Eretz Yisrael that was based on how many people they had. So now, it's going to turn out that we're going to lose five portions of land because they're going to marry out, and their husbands are going to be from other Shvatim, and what's going to be? So this is the quibble at the very end of Sefer Bamidbar. This is what's going on. How does it end? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what, marry whoever you want, and whatever happens, happens. That's the end of Sefer Bamidbar. Wow. I would say, it's hard to say about the Chumash, but it's a downer. The end, the climax of all Chamisha Chumshe, of everything that we learned in all of Sefer, Bereishis, Shmos, Vayikra, Bamidbar, ends with this? With this argument with Shevet Menashe, what are we going to do? The land and these women, who are they going to marry? It's irrelevant. This is what you're worrying about. This is how HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses to end off the entire story of his Torah. Fascinating. You think it's a mistake? Can't be. So what's happening here? Let's read the pasuk together, number Dalet. Zeh hadavar asher tziva Hashem livnos Tzlavchad leimar. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded to these daughters of Tzlavchad who ended up getting the Yerusha from their father. And now they were up against Shevet Menashe, who was very upset about it. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say to them? Latov be'eneyem tiyana lanashim. Go marry whoever you want. Latov be'eneyem tiyana lanashim. I'm going to tell you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you're a very capable woman. Marry whoever you want. I'm not going to tell you who to marry. Ach, l'mishpachas matei aviyem tiyana lanashim. Anybody knows Hebrew? So what does that mean? So the Gemara in Baba Basra is bothered. What just happened? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, marry whoever you want, but marry someone from your father's family. Which one did he say? Very confusing pasuk. Who should they marry? Who are they supposed to marry? These are wonderful young women, very eligible. They can marry whoever they want. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to marry whoever you want. But then, the second half says, you should marry someone from l'mishpachas matei aviyem tiyena l'nashim. You should try to marry someone from your father's family. The answer is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them, I'm not going to stop you. Is there any prohibition for you to marry someone from Shevet Reuven or Shimon? No. You can marry whoever you want. But you should know, what I want you to do is to try to find an appropriate match from your Shevet. You have a right to listen or not listen, but that's my Eitzah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if I were you, if you were asking me what to do, I would say, try to find someone from your Shevet. But you have free rein to not listen to me. Can there be a more powerful ending to all of Torah than that? There was a shidduch crisis back then also. You have five women who are all sisters. None of them are married. Their father died. The community is ganging up against them. Everyone's angry. Who's going to marry these women? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, marry whoever you want. But if you want to do the right thing, try to find someone in your shevet. And what happens? They all waited till they found someone in their shaving. Can there be a more powerful and poignant message for a Jew who's learning through the Chumash than that story? I didn't know what the rest of my life was going to be. Who knows if I would ever find a shidduch? How many men are there in Shevet Menashe that I haven't yet met? We all live in the same community. Who am I going to find? Why not expand the circle, go date somebody else? The answer is no. Because I know that the Ratzon Hashem is to do this. And even though I'm allowed to do something else, HaKadosh Baruch Hu already told me that His Ratzon is to do this. Why would I do something else? Let's read it together in the Sefer Me'ah Shiloach. Ha'inyan shenichta b'siyam ha-Torah l'parsha zos. Why does the Torah basically end everything, the whole narrative, with this story? She'eino noheges rak tasha. It seems inconsequential. La'haros lahem li'Yisrael. It's trying to teach the Jewish people. He takes a play on the words from a pasuk in Tanakh. Ki lo al ha'lechem levado yichyeh ha'adam. Ki al kol motzeh pi Hashem yichyeh ha'adam. What does it mean? Lechem hainu divrei Torah. Our lives cannot only be governed by the lechem itself, by the strict letter of the law, by what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. Klalim anitzrechem lakol b'chal eis l'chal nefesh. Of course, we need to follow everything that it says in the Gemara and in the Shulchan Aruch. Mi b'li shum shino yutmura v'heim atariag mitzvos. But beyond that, we need to also understand what is the Ratzon Hashem. When we talk about our journey of life and all the different stops that we take, you have to travel on the Derech Hashem. What is the Derech of Hashem? Ma Ratzono b'chol rega l'fi eis v'hazman u'midivrei Torah yatza'or l'livos Yisrael she'yavinu omek Ratzon Hashem k'fi zman. Va'alkein, and therefore he says, Nichtav ha-parsha hazos, achar siyum kala Torah. This sums it all up. After we've told you everything you need to know, and all the mitzvahs and averas that you should follow and stay away from. B'chidei lahav in the Yisrael, this is to make the Jewish people understand that beyond everything you just learned, there's another dimension. And that is, we need to ask ourselves, what is the Ratzon Hashem? And the B'nos Slavcha get incredible amount of credit for the strength that they had to do the right thing. And it was painful and it was difficult for them. And everybody else was getting married and all their friends from school were having no trouble at all, but they stuck it out because they said, we know what the Ratzon Hashem is and that's what we're going to do. And they stuck with it. Is there a better way to end off all of Chumash than with that? Is there a better way to prove what the objective of all of life for a Jew is supposed to be about? It's not just Taryag Mitzvos. It's Asei Ritzono Kiritzonecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us not only to follow everything that is written, but beyond that, He wants us to intuit, to understand what's behind the message. What's behind the words that the Chumash itself says. What's behind this halacha? What does the Ribono Shel Olam want? You know, it's interesting. When you think about different halachas, you find not always is volunteering something that's good. Not always is that the case. Say, for example, the Gemara says if somebody decides, even though it's raining on Sukkot, and they're not going to be comfortable in the Sukkah, they say, I love the Sukkah so much, I want to sit there anyway. Is that appropriate or not? Well, you say, such an Eved Hashem, unbelievable, look at this person, willing to get freezing cold in the rain. Says the Gemara, Nikra Hedyot. What does a Hedyot mean? A fool. Why do you call me a fool? What do you mean? How many women in this room shake Lulav and Esrog on Sukkot? I assume everyone. Why? Because that's what we do, right? The Torah didn't say you have to do it, but we volunteer to do it. So how come when I volunteer to shake lulav and esrog, it's considered a wonderful thing? When I volunteer to sit in the sukkah when I don't have an obligation to do so, it's considered foolish. Why am I foolish? Why don't you say that anyone who's not obligated to shake lulav and esrog and they go ahead and do it is a fool also? We don't say that. The answer is, it takes a great person to understand what is the Ratzon Hashem in each scenario. Not every mitzvah is going to be the same. And not every reaction or response is going to be the same. So how to figure out what the Ratzon Hashem is in each particular scenario is going to be very difficult. But they're not all going to be the same. And that really is the challenge that our Mishnah poses for us here. Asei ritzono kiritzonecha. Sometimes it's so difficult to follow not just what the mitzvos tell us to do, but what the ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Not only to determine what it is, but when I know in my heart of hearts this is just not right. It just can't be. This is not what the Ribono Shel Olam wants. But there's nothing telling me that. But I know in my heart of hearts it can't be what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. There's no way. So how do I react? How do I respond when I'm confronted with those kinds of situations? And the Mishnah says that is a lifelong journey of Asei Ritzono Kiritzonecha, of turning around and saying, Al Pi Hashem Yachanu V'Al Pi Hashem Yiso. Do I have the ability to look at every decision of my life, at every juncture of life, and say, I'm going to do this based on not all the other calculations that I'm taking in mind, that I'm keeping in account, but also, what is the Ratzon Hashem in this decision that I'm about to make? What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want from me? What does He expect from me? What maybe am I missing and not understanding in what the Ratzon Hashem might be? And how can I better come to a place where I will align my Ratzon with the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well? So